Since this is the Tuesday after Shabbat Shuvah, I traditionally use this day to say my Shabbat Shuvah Drasha. I put in a lot of work into the Shabbat Shuvah Drasha, and since I say it on Shabbos, I can't tape it or have it filmed, so we do it now. And as I look around, I don't believe there's anybody here who was present at the drasha in Har Nof. All right, let's begin. Shlomo HaMelech says in Kohelet, "Eit lachashot ve'eit l'daber." There's a time to remain silent, and there's a time to speak. Rashi. There are times that a man remains silent and rewarded. Shenema, as it says, Vayidom Aaron. Aaron was silent following the death, the tragic death of his two sons. At the dedication of the Mishkan, he remained silent. The Zohar, he was rewarded, that God spoke to him directly when he gave the next parsha in Torah to the Jewish people, as it says, Vayedaber Hashem el Aaron. Usually it is Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe, God spoke to Moshe, but over here, because of his silence, it says Vayedaber Hashem el Aaron. Yayin v'shechar al teish, that's the parsha that a Kohen is not permitted to drink any intoxicating beverages before he enters the sanctuary. Ve'id l'daber, there's also a time to speak. Oz Yoshir Moshe, Moshe sang, Batoshar Devorah, Devorah sings. And then of course Rashi also brings the pasuk of the Haftorah that is said on Shabbos Shuva. The Shabbos Shuva, the Haftorah says, "Kechu imachem devadim, take with yourselves words, v'shuvu el Hashem, and return to God. Imru, say it clearly that you have finally arrived at the conclusion. Ashur lo yoshienu, Ashur is not going to save us. Al sus lo nirkov, we're not going to ride on the horses." That's a metaphor for Egypt. We're not going to depend on Egypt. And we will no longer say about the work of our own hand that this is our God, that we are capable of resolving all issues in the world. Number two. Amar Abchia Baraba, Amar Abzimoy. May I have to tell you, I'm going to say a word of the Briskehov, that Velden Salavetzi, Levracha. I think it's got to be well known. It's the first word that I heard from the Briskehov when I arrived in Yeshiva in Baltimore about 53 years ago. And it made a great impression on me. And I think it has been enshrined for all time now, because this Gemara appears in Sota. It also appears in Sanhedrin, and in the Art Scroll Gemara footnote down at the bottom brings the Brisker Rav. But now you're going to hear it the way he said it. Rav Chiya Bar Abba said in the name of Rav Simoi, "Shlosh Yohayu Ba'otah Itzah." There were three members of the cabinet of Paro. When Paro called for the destruction of the Jewish people, "Let us deal wisely with them," there were three members of his cabinet. They were Bilam, Iyov, and Yitro. Gemara says, Bilam Sheyad, Bilam who advised, "Throw Jewish children into the Nile." Nehrak was killed. Iyov Sheshatak, Iyov, who remained silent, Nidon b'Yisurin, was judged with terrible, terrible suffering. When we want to describe frightening suffering, we talk about the suffering of Iyov. Yitro Shebarach. Yitro who fled. He objected to the plan for the final solution of the Jewish problem. And he fled. Zachu minei banav sheyashu b'lishkat hakazit. His grandchildren sat in the office of the hewn stone. That was the office of the Sanhedrin on Har HaBayit. And of course he became the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. Brisker Rav asks, why is Eov punished for having remained silent? Eov remains there when there are two against him, Paro and Bilam. Eov is outvoted. It really makes no difference what Eov is going to say. He's not going to carry the day. So he remains silent. So what was wrong about his silence? Said the Brisker Rav the following, and it's best the way he said it. I tut vei shaitman.
Right.
If it hurts, then you cry out.
And
you stub your toe. You stub your toe. It's not a matter of deciding, should I say ouch or should I not say ouch? It comes instinctively. You hurt, you fall, you cry out. Since Eov didn't cry out, oy mishait nisht, mentos, it means as it tut nisht vei, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. When Jewish children are going to be thrown into the Nile, Eov, you're going to have to learn what it means to suffer. You're going to have to learn what it means to suffer. And this was, I remember being so moved when I heard this for the first time. If there's pain, if a human being, a fellow Jew, is in pain, even if you're not in a position to help, but it has to cause you pain. You have to feel the pain. Without shying, you have to speak out. We sometimes find that the very same person remains silent and is rewarded for that, and speaks out and is rewarded for that. There's no such thing that any one of the two is preferred over the other. Shlomo HaMelech, in fact, said, there's a time, lachashot, a time to remain silent. Ve'et l'daber, and there's a time to speak. You won't believe it. You won't believe it. My elementary school graduation from Purga Das, so the yearbook was called The Scroll. And you know, you had everybody's picture over there. Under my picture, they wrote, silence is golden. I think back, and I'm wondering, like, I always say that I was a very shy, reserved, embarrassed little boy, and most probably everything that happened since was simply in order to make that part of my past. I may be overcompensating in the other direction, but that's what they wrote. I still have a copy of that yearbook. Silence is golden. Rachel, the Gemara in Megillah number 3, I'm not going to read the text, I'll tell you what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Bishar tzniut, because of the humility, and they mean here the silence of Rachel, she was zeicher that the king Shaul came from her, first king to arise over Israel. And then of course later on Esther also comes from Rachel. What was the humility of Rachel? So the Mara describes that when Yaakov first met her, he asked her to marry him. So she said, no, I have an older sister, and my father is a deceitful man. So Yaakov says, Och, if I need but Amos, I can handle. I'm a brother who is in deceit. I can handle it. She must have laughed to herself, thinking Yaakov thinks he's going to be capable in out deceiving Lavan. He doesn't know that he has met his match. And then the fact is, the night of her wedding, and she's supposed to be the kala that's going to the chuppah, and she sees that her sister is being taken. She had two choices. One was to shout out in rage, "You can't do this," and it would never have happened. But she was concerned about the shame and the embarrassment of her sister Leah. So therefore, there were certain signals and codes that had been made up between Rachel and Yaakov so that he should know who she is. And she gave all of that information over to her sister Leah so that she should not be embarrassed. We're talking about courageous silence. Absolutely courageous silence. I would say just about superhuman silence. Shlomo HaMelech, Eich Lachashod, there's a time to remain silent. But is Rachel always the silent one? Oh no, she isn't. The Haftorah of the second day of Rosh Hashanah, we learn the Haftorah. The Jewish people are being taken out into exile by Nebuzaradan and Nebuchadnezzar. And she comes out above her grave, above Kever Rachel, and she cries out to the very heavens. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov have already stood before God, Yirmiyahu, Yishayahu, Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't know who else. But then Rachel, Kol Berama Nishbat, Kol Am Hashem, so says God, the voice is heard on high. Nehi, Bechi, Tamrim, moaning, bitter crying. Rachel mevaka alvoneha, Rachel crying for her children. Me anolhi nachem, she refuses to be consoled alvoneha ki einenu, because her children are not there. She refuses to be consoled. Nothing. She cries out, the very heavens shake. God is listening intently. Erev Shabbos, I spoke to my good friend Rabbi Nachman Kahana. You all know Rabbi Nachman Kahana. Yeah. So, says, Shalom, I want to tell you a nice word that I said. So he tells me, Alboneha is a plural, ki einenu is a single. She cries about her children, plural, because he is not there. So he said, she cries for all of her children, but she's not going to be consoled until every last one returns home. I told him, Nachman, I'm going to say it tomorrow in the Drasha, and I'm going to quote you. I want you to know, I did it. I said it, and I quoted his name. Even Jonathan Pollard, every last one, Ramachat, you name it. They're all going to be back. Kol Hashem, so the Rebbeinu Shem says to her, Mini Kolet Mibechi, withhold your voice from crying, Veinayach Midima, restrain your eyes from tears, Ki Yesh Sacholufu Lateichum Hashem, Geshavu Me'eretz Oyev, there is reward for all that you've done, your children will return from the land of the enemy, there is hope for your end, says God, Geshavu Banim, Likvulam, children, the sons will return to their boundaries. We are almost probably here because Rachel cried. The promise that the Shavu, Banim, Likvulam, her children, will return from exile, this promise was made to Rachel because she refused to be consoled. I think that we should stop for a moment to think that we are here because of Rachel. Because Rachel knew, first of all, when to remain silent, and maybe more important, she also knew Eitlidaber. She knew when to speak out, cry out at the top of her lungs. The Rashi on Eitlidaber had mentioned Vatoshar Devorah. Devorah sings. Here was the great threat to the Jewish people from Sisra, commander-in-chief of the forces of the enemy. They gathered in Einat Yisrael for the great battle. The song of Devorah isn't only a song. In the song of Devorah, Devorah also makes very strong accusations. And that's the essence of what this drasha is all about. And it's those accusations that we have to listen to. She talks, yes, about the great victory, the Sarai v'Yisachar in Devorah, the tribe of Yisachar, and all of her officers, they were there with Devorah. The Yisachar came, Barak Yisachar, together with the commander-in-chief of our forces, Barak ben Avinoam. Ba'emek Shulach Beraglav, into the valley they went on foot. Oh, but Biflagot Reuven, the withdrawal of Reuven, Gedolim Chiki Kalev, needs great contemplation. Reuven didn't come. Reuven didn't participate. Reuven didn't call out in outrage. Reuven wasn't there when Klal Yisrael needed them. Reuven remained silent. So she says about Reuven who remained silent, Lama yashavta bein hamishpatayim? Why did you remain sitting by the boundary lines, lishmo ashrikot adadim, to hear the bleeding of the flocks? Reuven is right across the garden. He has all of his grazing land. Klal Yisrael is in serious, serious trouble. An enemy has attacked. And we get a picture of Reuven sitting very pastorally, tending his flocks, maybe playing his little Khalil, and he's not involved. He's not involved. He remains silent. For Reuven's withdrawal, Reuven's restraint, Reuven's silence, Gedolim Chikrei Lev. Oh boy, we have to figure this out. What happened over here? Why did you remain silent? There's an issue that involves all of Klal Yisrael. Kilobei v'hayaden shachem. Gilad remained on the other side of the Jordan. V'don lama yagur amiyot don, why was he out there with his ships at sea? Asher yashav l'chof yanim v'amitratzav yishkon. In this last passage she talks about those who did come. Not only Yisachar came, but Zvulun, An, Chedef, Nafshol, Amud, V'naftali, Amudom, Yisada. Zvulun risked his life. And so too Naphtali on the heights of the battlefield. We've gone through an extremely difficult time here in the last year and a half. We've gone through a difficult time from Tisha B'Av until now, and it's not over. There were those who spoke out, and there were those who remained silent. And the cheshbon hanefesh that's made after the tragedy that has taken place over here must include asking the question, those who remain silent, why did you remain silent? And I'm talking not only about major segments of the religious community here in Eretz Yisrael. Major segments of the religious community in the United States of America in the modern Orthodox community, in the Orthodox community, in the Zionist community, in the Haredi community, here and there. I don't understand. I don't understand why people remain silent. I don't understand. Here is a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. Oh, I keep coming back to this Rambam. I'm haunted by this Rambam. Time and time again. This is the second half of a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, third chapter, third halacha. The first part of the Rambam is known to everybody. The first part of the Rambam is that famous statement of the Rambam that the sounding of the shofar, though it is gzeirat hakatuv, it is a divine decree, but there is a message in the sounding of the shofar. Awake, you sleepers, arise, you slumberers, get out of the rut in which you've been in. Begin to take a look at life seriously, see where you're going. What are you doing? Then he says, lefichach, second line. The person has to see himself all year as though he is perched precariously, half innocent, half guilty. Imagine the scales of justice. There they are, absolutely equal. The chain kol ha'olam, he has to look at the whole world. Chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayiv. Half innocent, half guilty. Which now must lead a person to the conclusion. If he sins one sin, you know what he did? He has inclined himself and the whole world. He's made them all guilty. The Goram lo hashchasa. And he has caused them destruction. We learned this Rambam when we studied the Haftorah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah. But there are a few new things that I've learned in the Rambam since 2 weeks ago. Also mitzvah achas, if he does one mitzvah, he has inclined himself and the whole world for merit. One mitzvah. And he's made literally all the difference in the world. And he has caused himself and them great salvation. Now watch, I want to point out something we haven't pointed out in the past. When it says that he did one sin, so it says, Ichriya et atzvo vet kol olam kulo, lekaf chove v'goram lo hashchosa, has caused destruction for himself. When he does one mitzvah, the Rambam says more. The Goram lo v'lohem, he has caused for himself and for them tshuva v'hatzala, salvation and rescue. He didn't say that when he talked about a person doing one aveira. When he talks about doing one aveira, so the Rambam says he has caused for himself destruction. Because you know what? You did an aveira. What do you think? You think that the Rebbeinu was going to let the world be destroyed? You just didn't have the schus of being the one to save the world. You know what? Somebody else is going to get that schus. When he does a mitzvah, then the Rambam says, God, I'm loathful of him, tshuva. He causes for himself and for them great salvation and rescue. Shanama, it's something to Sodala. A number of the ideas that we expressed with regard to this, I had told you gentleman to whom I was sent on a mission 12 years ago when there was an important vote that was going to take place in the Knesset, and we needed this man to influence the party that he headed, that they should vote against the proposal. And I was sent with 1,300 signatures, calling upon them to
vote against proposal. And in the course of the conversation, he tells me, we're going to abstain. We're going to abstain. I told you, you'll recall, that usually the great retort and the great reply we always think of after the conversation is over. An hour later, oh, what I should have told him. And then you go over it in your mind and you're really so aggravated, you didn't say the right thing at the right time. Over here, for some strange reason, I had, I think they sent it down from heaven. I believe it was the third day of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, during which, in fact, is one should learn a chapter a day of the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva. So this was the third chapter, it must have been the third day, and I learned it in the morning. And I tell him, after he responds, that they're going to abstain. So I told him this Rambam, and I asked the question on the Rambam. The Rambam posits only two possibilities. There's the whole world hanging in the balance. And yet, one possibility is that the man will do a mitzvah, and the other possibility is that he's going to do a veda. So I said, why doesn't the Rambam posit a third possibility? He'll abstain. He'll do nothing. He'll do nothing. To which I said, because the Rambam assumes a human being, for better or worse, takes a stand. He does something. To do nothing, that's not a mensch. That's not a mensch. He didn't talk to me for 5 years after that. And he was justified in not talking to me. But this year we said a bit more. The one who abstains, when he has it within his power to bring salvation to a whole world, that's a hate. That's a hate. Can there be a greater sin than holding it within your hands, the possibility of bringing Shua Bahatzola to a whole world and you don't do it? That's not it. The Rambam is saying, man cannot remain silent. Man cannot remain silent. There's no such thing as abstaining. There's no such thing as withdrawing. He's expressing the words of Devorah, Lama Yoshafto Bein HaMishpatayim. What were you doing over there? There's a time for silence, and there's a time to speak out. Let's turn over. We're going to learn about a time for silence that will ultimately become a time for speaking out. Terrible tragedy has occurred. The brothers of Yosef have sold him into slavery. To Mitzrayim. Tragedy that darts us throughout all the generations. Amru, they said to one another, Medrash Tanchuma, they said to one another, listen very carefully, Nacharim Beinenu, let us make a ban of excommunication between us, Shelo Yagid Echad Mimenu LeYaakov Avinu, that nobody under curse, nobody should say anything to our father Yaakov. Amar Lahem Yehuda, so Yehuda said, Ruvein Eino Kan. Ruvein is not here. Ruvein is the one who, in order to save him from his brothers, had put him in the pit. He had to be home that day. It's while Reuven is away that they take him out of the pit and they sell him to the Midianim and the Ishmaelim, who sell him to Mitzrayim. So Reuven isn't there. So Yehuda says, in order to establish the halachic validity of the ban of excommunication, we need a minion, and we're only nine because Reuven isn't here. Ein hachedim itkayim elo basara. Ma'osu, what did they do? Shifu la'kodesh baruch hu be'oto hachedim shelo yagid la'viyem. They included the Rebbeinu Shleilam to be the center, the tenth of the minyan, that he too should not tell Yaakov.
That
night Reuven went back to the pit Lahaloto to bring Yosef out for Lo Mitzo, and he didn't find him. Koraz begodav, he tore his garments, ubocha, and he cried. Chozal le'echov, he came back to his brothers and he said to them, Hayeled einenu v'ani ono ani bo, the boy isn't there, and where am I going to go? What will I do with myself?
Higidu lo es ha'maiser,
they told him what they did, that hacheden, and that there's a ban of excommunication on anybody who speaks. The Shabbat. Reuven remained silent.
The HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when the Holy One, blessed be He Himself,
even though it says about Him, Magid, the word of the Yaakov, He tells His things to Yaakov, Dovah Zeh Lo Higid, He never told him that the brothers had sold Yosef into slavery, because of the ban of excommunication. That's why Yaakov said, Toro, Torah, Yosef. Yosef has been torn apart by a wild animal. I have two main questions on the Medrash. Question number one is, I don't know of a halacha that says that you need a minyan to establish a cheder. As long as the people present accept upon themselves that they're not going to say this, that's enough. If anything, maybe you will need a bezin of three, but a minyan you need for a davar shekedusha, something of sanctity, kadosh kedusha, baruch hu, kriyas haTorah, shmona esrei. That's what you need a minyan for. Who needs a minyan for a cheder? Bigger question, of course, is, do you know what kind of silence this is? This is a conspiracy of silence. This is a conspiracy of people who have committed a terrible, terrible act. Is this a time to remain silent? Or is this a time to act out with rage? And the Rebbeinu Shleilam agrees to be part of this conspiracy of silence. Unbelievable. Why does he do it? He should thunder from the very heavens against the terrible act that has taken place. But no. He becomes the tenth of the minyan. He remains silent. Reuven remains silent. Reuven, more than any other, should have railed with anger. They remained silent. Pshat in the Medrash is the following. Some of the brothers, maybe all of the brothers, understood that if there will not be a ban of excommunication, with the passage of time, the following is going to be the scenario. I can imagine it now. They're going to come home. They're going to see terrible suffering, their father. They are going to have guilty consciences. They're going to walk around full of pain. They're walking around with this horrible secret. The pressure begins to build. And somebody's going to crack. Somebody's going to break. Who do you think will break first? And how do you think he's going to tell it to his father? I'll tell you. The one who's going to break first is the one who's going to think that he's not guilty. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to come to his father and say, Tata Laban, you know what he did? You know what they did?
Yeah.
If we can permit that to happen, if we can permit the blame game to begin, if you saw the News of the Week in review in the New York Times last week that comes with the Jerusalem Post Monday edition, so they have a half a page with pictures of all the people involved in the New Orleans Katrina disaster. Yeah. top of the page says the blame game. They have a picture of Bush and arrows coming from Bush in all directions. This guy's to blame, that guy's to blame. The mayor of New Orleans is blaming a few others. The governor, American relief agencies, everybody's blaming everybody else. If the brothers would not have been under Benedict's communication, you know what would have happened? They would have destroyed themselves with the blame game. They would have torn each other apart. That family would never be able to create a klal that would be necessary for every Darush of Kedusha. There'll never be a minion to say Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch. No Kiddush Hashem will ever be present, because there will be a family that will have tore itself asunder from within by blaming one another. You think it hadn't begun? Oh, believe me, it has begun already. Right after the story, it says, Vayeled Yehuda Meivechov, Yehuda went down from his brothers. It's an interruption in the story of Yosef. The Pasuk says, and Yosef was brought down to Egypt. And then they tell us the whole story of Yehuda leaving his brothers. And it's only at the end of that story where Peretz and Zorach upon, it starts again, and Yosef is brought down to Egypt. So Rashi, number 7, Vayibay Tahi, Yehuda went down, Loma Nismecha Parsha Zulukan, why is this Parsha of Yehuda here? V'hissik v'parsha Tosha Yosef, and it interrupts the Parsha of Yosef. Lelame, this comes to tell us, Shahori Duhu Echov Migitulaso, his brothers brought Yehuda down from his greatness. Kishero B'tzarat Aviem, when they saw the pain of their father. Omro, it started, they said, Atom Artolonachro, you said that we should sell him. You're guilty. Ilu Amarto Lahashid, though if you would have told us, take him back home, Hagiu Shomin Lecha, we would have listened to you. So Vayet, he moves away from his brothers. You know what's beginning? What's beginning is the disintegration of a family. And do you know what is ultimately going to save this family? Because there's a Benedict's excommunication. Nobody can walk over to Yaakov and say, he did, they did. They're going to have to walk with this pain inside. And 22 years later, when they are standing in the presence of Tzafnat Paneach, the viceroy of Egypt, and they are accused of being spies. Number 8. The great statement, they finally open up, the first time that they speak about it since the sale of Yosef, since their betrayal of their brother. Vayomru ish el echov, each one said to another, Aval ashamim anachnu, we are guilty. Alochinu about our brother, Asheroinu tzaras nafsho, we saw his pain. Bid chanano eleinu, when he pleaded with us, v'lo shamanu, we didn't listen to his pain. Al kein bo eleinu atzorazos. That's why this tzora has befallen us. You know why they are ultimately able to achieve this? Because they have to remain silent. If they wouldn't have remained silent, if they wouldn't have had to remain silent, they could never have achieved tshuva. They could never have repented, because they would have found fault with everybody else but not with themselves. And if you find fault with everybody else, you can't do tshuva. You have to be able to say, I sinned. And the fact is that they all sinned. There are those who sinned by doing the act, and there are those who sinned because they remained silent. If you weren't Shimon and Levi, and you weren't Yehuda, but you were Yisachar, you were Zvulun, you were Dan, you were Naphtali, did you cry out? Did you object? Or did you remain silent? That's the answer to one question. The question about whether you need a minion. You know why you need a minion for the ban of excommunication? Because this ban of excommunication is a davar shebekedusha. It's an act of great sanctity. It's in order to bring the Jewish people into existence that we'll be able to say Kaddish HaKadosh V'nikdash B'tov B'nei Yisrael. There was a second question. Second question, why does God join this unholy alliance? You know why? Because the Rebbeinu Shem knows inevitably it's bound to happen. When a tragedy has occurred and the blame is handed out, somebody is going to say, and where was God, pray tell me? Where was the Rebbeinu Shalom? Where were you when all of this happened? The Rebbeinu Shalom knows that the blame is going to be handed out. He's going to get a piece of the blame for what was done by man. Man did it, but they're going to blame him. Where were you? Why didn't you bring the miracle? Why didn't you come down and pluck Yosef out of their hands? So you know what it means? If they can talk freely about it, they will ultimately accuse the Rebbeinu Shalom of complicity in this terrible act. That's a chilul Hashem. To remain silent, therefore, becomes kiddush Hashem.
Actually, Yosef was part of the of that family, because he never told his father about it.
Haki. It's 22 years later when they finally say Abba Hashem and Anachnu that we are guilty. It is only then that Reuven, who has been controlling himself for 22 years, bursts out by Yan Reuven Otam Leimor, and Reuven answered them saying, Halo Amarti Aleichem, but I said to you, Leimor, quote, I said to you, Al Techa Tu Bayelet, don't sin about the child below Shemata, and you didn't listen. The Gamdomo Nidrash. And behold, his blood is being demanded of us now. I once said that this pasuk used to bother me, until I decided that you know what bothered me about this pasuk is that I was brought up in a Western culture that has certain forms of conduct that may not necessarily be correct. For example, the idea of "I told you so." Nobody does that. No, in nice company, you don't tell somebody "I told you so." What's Reuven saying over here? "I told you so." You know what the Torah is telling us? Oh, there are times that you have to say "I told you so." You have to make sure that the terrible crime that was committed is something that they will remember forever. I told you so. I pleaded with Jewish organizations in the United States of America to speak out. I begged. Failed. I devoted a month and a half, 2 months. At least come out for a national referendum. At least. Silence. Absolutely accursed silence. Lama yashavta b'inam rishpatayim. Why did you sit there silently? Playing your flute and watching your flocks. There's a time to speak out. There's a time for silence. There's a time to speak out. the brothers knew, following the sale of Yosef, that this was a time for silence. It's a time for cheshbon hanefesh. Because if we're going to let everybody say whatever they want to say, we're going to destroy ourselves. We will destroy ourselves from within others. We will never build the cluster.
Vayihimi Moharas, number 9.
By the way, it says over there, number 8, going back for a moment, they didn't know that Yosef is listening because the interpreter was there. Vayisov Me'alem Vayev, he turned away from them and he cried. And he came back and he said to them, and he spoke to them, and he took Shimon. Yosef is crying. He's heard his brothers admit their guilt. Why doesn't he reveal himself? Why doesn't he reveal himself? This is the moment. Because you know what Yosef wants to do? Yosef knows of a Rambam in the second chapter of Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam says, do you know what perfect tshuva is? When a person finds himself in precisely the same position with the opportunity and the will to do the same aveda, and one doesn't do the aveda because of tshuva, that's it. You know what Yosef is doing? After he cries and he turns to speak to them, he's giving them the opportunity to do tshuva. He takes Shimon and puts him in jail. And you know what Yosef is hoping for? That they would say, oh no, you're not going to take a Yiddish kin from us. We'll tear you apart. And you know what happens? Tragic. Yosef is crestfallen. He's heartbroken. They let him take Shimon. You know what Yosef knows? Yosef knows now that he's going to have to set up the situation again. Create the framework. He's going to have to call upon them to bring Binyamin. And he's going to frame Binyamin. And they all are brought back. Next trip to Mitzrayim. It's going to have to wait. And there it is. They've now brought them home. Binyamin is the one who stole the cup. The tension inside Yosef is bringing him to the breaking point. He tells them, I'm going to keep Binyamin. He's going to be my slave. This is it. It's their last chance. How are they going to respond? How are they going to react? Are they going to, God forbid, fail again? Then there's no hope for them. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda comes over to him and he prepares himself to speak tough language. Rashi even says he's ready for war. You and how can I go to my father and the boy is not with me? Yehuda most probably thinks that he's sending the fear of God into this Sofnas Paneach character. What he doesn't know is that inside Yosef is thrilled, he's full of joy. He most probably want to cover his face and start smiling. They did it. They didn't fail again. They're doing tshuva. They're not going to leave a Yiddish kid in the hands of the enemy. That's when he turns to them and says, Ani Yosef, Ani Yosef. He has brought them into the whole process of tshuva to a most successful culmination. And you know why it all started? Eight Lahashat. is a time to remain silent. And eight, the daber, and it's a time to speak out. The brothers knew when to remain silent. God knew when to remain silent. Reuven knew when to remain silent. Medrash even says Yitzchak knew about it, and Yitzchak knew to remain silent. Vayhi Macharas, the day after the sin of the Egel, the day after the sin of the Egel, the 3,000 who worshipped the Egel have been put to death. Vayhi Macharas, Moshe says to the people, Aten chatatem chata'agetol lagim, sinned a great sin. And now, Eileh Hashem, I'm going to go up to God. Maybe I will find forgiveness, atonement for your sin. Moshe returned to God and he said, this people have sinned, they have made a god of gold. I don't understand what Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about. All of those who worship the Egel have already been put to death. What's the great sin? What is the meaning of the word chata'ah? You ever heard of a chata'ah? I heard of a chait, an avon, a pesha, a chata'ah. What's a chata'ah? He says it twice. You sinned a chata'ah gedolah. Chata'ah gedolah. He goes up to God and he says, they made a god. They didn't. We didn't make it. You know what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them? 3,000 people are making an Egel Hazor. What did the other 2 million Jews do then? Was there a demonstration? Did you stand up with rage and cry out? Did you put on orange? What did you do? You remain silent? How do you remain silent? There is a sin of commission and there's a sin of omission. The 3,000 who worshipped the Egel committed the sin of commission. But those who remain silent, the sin of omission. That's what a chata'ah is. And I'll prove it to you. The end of Parsha Shofim, it says the man is found dead between two cities. Sanhedrin has to measure off to the closest city, and the closest city has to bring an egel, a young calf, down into a valley and chop its head off. And it says that the elders of the city have to lift their voices. Number 10, Ba'anu v'yomru, Yodein lo shokwas adam azeh, our hands did not spill this blood. And our eyes did not see. You ever seen Shofhu spell the way it's spelled here with a hay at the end? Shofhu is always spelled with a vav at the end. Yodeinu lo shofhu, our hands did not spill this blood. Rashi on the side, the famous Rashi, Yodeinu lo shofhu. V'chi olsta aleiv, did it occur to anybody that the elders of the Beis Din were killers? They have to say, our hands didn't spill this blood, and we didn't see. You know what they're supposed to say? V'chi olsta aleiv, shezikney Beis Din shofchei domine. Are the elders of Beis Din spillers of blood? You know what they have to say? That we did not see this man and let him go without aid and assistance. If we saw him and he needed food, we gave him. We did not just let this man go through our town and pay no attention. We didn't remain silent. We're innocent. Spilling blood can either be the act of the murderer. Spilling blood can be the authorities that don't do what should be done to make sure that blood will not be spilled. They carry the blame. Hay means the sin of omission, remaining silent. There's a number 11, there is a pasuk from Mishlei that scares the wits out of me. Absolutely frightening. Otem osno mizak adar. The one who closes his ears from the cry of the poor. Gam hu yikra velo yeyoneh. He'll call out and he won't be answered. You close your ears to the cry of the poor, or those who are suffering, or those who are in need, or those who cry out to you and you don't hear, and you remain silent, you're going to call out to the Rabbeinu Shlomo and he's not going to answer. Rabbeinu Yonah says, midah k'neged midah, measure for measure. I don't understand how those who remain silent can get up on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur say, Shema Kaleinu Hashem Lekeinu, hear our voices, God of our hosts, V'rachem Aleinu Hevrachmanes. Did you hear? Did you listen? Were you tuned in? Did you care? Otem Osno Mizak Adal, the one who closes his ears from the cry of the poor, Gamhu Yikra Velo Yeyoneh. Gamhu Yikra Velo Yeyoneh. Sometimes I tell myself, that these same groups, will they make the same mistake again?
Yeah.
I'm afraid that they're serial sinners. Serial sinners. A profound tragedy took place. I hope I never write up the lists of people and organizations that I spoke to who turned me down flat. Turned me down flat. I imagine most probably, maybe this is an ugly thing to say, but I can't help myself. I'm not living up to what they wrote in my yearbook. I'm sorry, I can't help it. They're raising money for Katrina, so they also have to raise money for Gush Katif. What are you talking about? I don't understand. And whom? Now we need it to raise money after the Churban. I tell you, I can't help it. What has taken place during the course of this year? Tsunami, Rita, Stan, Katrina, Asia Now, all of these disasters. And I see the pictures. I can't help it. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I see destroyed homes. And I see the exact same picture of Gush Katif, except all the rest are act of God, and this is an act of man. Churban? There had to be another way. The answer dare not be, we'll destroy and we'll level Jewish homes. Give them a piece of land someplace else. They would never level one tenth of an Arab. And we even look at it as, those who look at it as a tremendous accomplishment. Churban. And people remain silent. I think it makes you crazy. O tenos no mizak as thou, gam hu yikra below yikra now. some while ago, my wife printed something out for me from the computer. If it's a good word, it goes from the computer to the fridge. Right? Got it? From the computer, it's printed out, goes on to the fridge. This one was that good that I printed it out and I put it on my, I have an address book. I don't use a Palm Pilot, a Blueberry, a Blackberry, any one of these things. I don't know how to use them. But you may remember from the old times, there were books in which you wrote with pen, and I write, that's my address book. On the outside of my address book, I pasted on exactly what you have on your sheet number 12. And I Xeroxed it from my address book. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. You can never know when you say a good word what it's going to do for people. One of my fellows in shul came over to me afterwards and says, Rabbi, that was a great drasha. He's from Ireland. Edmund Burke was an Irish philosopher. That I ended my drasha with an Irish philosopher, you understand. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And one has to have the wisdom to know when to remain silent and when to speak out.